Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Joining us again today, it is Cybersecurity Sunday. I have Mr. Win Win, cybersecurity expert, joining us again today. And today's topic is ransomware, specifically MagNiber. Am I saying that right, Win?
Yeah, just that close enough.
MagNiber ransomware, and this is a serious one. Well, they're all serious, but the impact of this one is significant. So anyway, we're going to dive into some of the details on that, to talk about the impact, the technical underpinnings, prevention tips, and then a couple of other topics there. And we may interject some other related topics if we have time. So when did MagNiber say that for me?
Well, let's see, MagNiber.
Okay, MagNiber.
So this ransomware has recently intensified its attack on a home user globally, and the significant impact the individual by encrypting their device and demand ransom.
And ransoms are payments we make.
Before we dive in, let me explain to you what is. I know a lot of people understand what ransomware is, but I want to get the definition out of the way. You know,
okay.
It's a malicious software or malware that encrypts or lock value digital or demand ransom to release them. Just think of it like a digital kidnapper taking your file hostage and asking money for return of their release. Same concept.
And it's a device level.
Well, yes. So endpoint or device. So let's just say if you click on the link and they will encrypt your file, your document, your video, your photo.
What about your Gmail? Can I log in at a desktop even though the ransomware came on my phone? Or
Well, it depends. But before we go any further, let's talk about the history where the virus came from.
Okay.
So this is not something new. It's been a while.
Okay.
So this typical virus was first appeared 2017, and primarily targeting user in South Korea. Okay, and now and off the sudden you see the spike last week and actually last month. The recent report in 2024, a significant spike in with victim file being encrypted and appended in with you will see the extension. Okay, and most cases, the attacker demand ransom started from 1,000 and increased to 5,000 if not paid within 3 days. You know, it's getting worse.
And how do you see this file on your phone? I mean, can you use the Apple Files app, or how do I go check?
So the way you check, let's just say off the sun, you launch your Word document or Excel
On a phone or an iPad or.
No, not an iPad, usually on your PC.
Okay.
Not the phone, usually on your computer.
Okay.
Not your iPad or your iPhone. Okay. Most of the time it's on your PC. And the way you know it's infected or not, you see the extensions. Look like XYZ. They have extension, a very unique extension, and you cannot open it. Okay. And the moment you open it, there's a message appear, your files has been encrypted, and you need to pay with Bitcoin.
Hmm.
You know, they give you the instruction to pay for it. But when you look at all your files, you see there's an extension, you can open it. So imagine that. And the impact of that is very significant. And this time, it's not at the corporate level, but at the user level. So you think about it, it's all over around the world right now.
Hmm.
Okay, so in this show, I want to talk about the impact and also I will list a technical breakdown and some prevention tips.
Okay, great. Okay. And the target is not, they don't discriminate against corporate versus non-corporate users, et cetera, correct?
Right, and this one is just spreading like your PC. If you have 5 PCs at home, it will spread to your, all your PC. Huh. And right now at the user level.
How do they find the first PC? That's what I'm never understanding on these attacks.
Well, they just spread.
But is it, do they target Facebook? Do they target, what do they target? What's the carrier? So, who's the carrier?
So typically? Basically, it's not through the carrier. Basically, through, this is how it works, okay? The way it works is like this. Fake update, okay? And also, people who download software and try to crack the software, right? And they also exploit software vulnerability. That's one of the technical breakdown that I can talk maybe after the break, some more detail.
Okay.
But for now, I want to talk. I just want people to be aware of the ransomware and the impact. First, you understand the impact and be aware, you know?
Okay, great.
So anyway, with some of the things that we can do to prevent all that is what you need to do is just look at, make sure you have the anti-software on your all your PC.
Antivirus?
Antivirus software.
Like you have a suggestion? As, I mean,
Well, a user can text us later, but I'm not going to specify okay. which kind. But
and VPNs, do those help?
VPNs help, but it doesn't matter if you click on a file. The key thing is the website, malicious website. Stay away from that.
And can they come in from PDF attachments?
That can also too, yes.
Okay.
The ones is spread through your update or through uh-huh. your, once you click on it, okay, then it can go anywhere. Like
and what
I said.
What about, like, you know, I get updates on applications all the time. How do you tell by looking? I mean, if it's from a legitimate source, it could still be infected. How do we know?
Well, look at this way, okay? Once in a while, you see an update from Microsoft, right?
Right.
Okay. And you can see, you can validate where it's coming from. Look at the source coming from. Because, for number one, you didn't click on anything, right? But usually it started when you click on something and then your right-hand corner and you see the message appear. And it's not Microsoft. It would look like Microsoft or look like the other stuff.
But if you've got your software, I know I've got a couple Microsoft apps, remote desktop being one, and I know that about, I don't know, at least once a week I see the Microsoft updater is working. You know, it's running in the background where that's instituted from my machine directly to Microsoft. Are right. those type of downloads theoretically
no.
safe? Or?
No, this particular one, yeah. you actually have to go on site and you click on something. You actually click on the link. For example, if you see something, you were browsing on something, right? Let's say you search for something. You accidentally type in the wrong address and the website appear, and then you click on it. Okay, that's when it started. It looked like an update.
So it's almost one of those situations with phishing where there's a certain level of intrigue to something you saw, and now you want to go see what's in the candy jar, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And,
okay.
Now that is, I would say the fake update is about 20%, but majority of them came from, now this is for the developer, okay, or the people who access to try to crack the software and make illegal copy. This is where I would say 50%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they actually had to go in there, hey, you know what, I see this software, I'm not going to pay for it, free access, and they try to use the cracked software, then this is where the problem coming. I would say 50%. Okay, and the other 30% is software vulnerabilities. Okay.
Have any examples?
Well, like they call it including a zero-day exploit. Like if your software, like it depends who, like most of them like MP3 music, okay?
Okay.
And if you buy the software and those software are not legitimate, I would say it's not like secure, they can cause also too, because the virus can be up, can be downloaded from there.
So the same lack of security that allowed somebody to make a counterfeit copy is opening the door to
that's
these
how,
type of exploits.
Right. So it's not come from one source. Like I said, come from three sources, right? So far that I can see, fake update, cracked software, and software vulnerabilities. Those are the three areas that's where the virus could come in. And not just necessarily have to be this typical Magnavir ransomware. It could be any ransomware. Okay, that's the whole idea. They target using this method.
Okay.
So now some of the stuff that we can do, like I said, we can have antivirus. We have a strong spam filter. But last but not least, is backup data regularly. You need to do that and educate yourself and others.
Does the backup your data regularly suggestion, what happens if this ransomware is already on a file that you haven't opened yet and you're backing up your data? Are you effectively backing up the ransomware exploit as well?
Well, it depends on what kind of backup you have. Okay. Right? So if you have the backup, like the one that I have, like a cloud backup, I'm not going to name what kind of backup, but basically it do increment and also do full. So it depends what day. You can go back to the day.
So you don't do incremental, you do full backups.
I do full increment and delta.
Okay.
So let's just say all my file was encrypted this morning.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I can go back yesterday.
Before you've clicked anything.
Before you click anything, you can go back. Just like a time machine on the Mac.
And does the ransomware, let's say you've got a file that's infected, and that's a file that for whatever reason you never click, you never open it. Does it unilaterally on its own, open at some point?
Well, if you
extract,
have,
I guess.
If you have
word?
A good backup system, it will detect the file.
The malware.
The malware. And if you have good endpoint security, it will detect the file.
Yeah, but you're talking about, in the case of individual users not working in corporate America, who has that? Right?
Well, at least you have a legitimate or a endpoint security that several of them out there that will pick that up. At least have, or even
so Microsoft. Gmail has those kind of filters?
Email have
in?
Their own filter, but not 100%. They always want to get away.
Right.
Like any other endpoint, they also have it, the technology, but it take only one time. Usually it will detect, but usually it's not. It's when the people click on the file.
Yeah.
And it's already happened.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Okay. Well, let's do this. We're right on top of our first break. Let's go ahead and take a break. And we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show, where it's Cybersecurity Sunday.
You're always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama. Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. Here's a word.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
bross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and vague dreams. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and it is Cybersecurity Sunday. I have our cybersecurity expert, Mr. Nguyen Nguyen, on hand again today, and he is explaining to us the concept, or not the concept, the actual occurrence that's raised its head here more recently in the ransomware arena, and it's referred to as MacNiber. And if you're familiar with that, I hope you're tangential to it, and it's not because you've had a ransomware request. And but anyway, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what is it, the impact that it's causing, the technical breakdown of how it operates, and now Nguyen is going to discuss prevention tips.
Thank
Go
you,
ahead,
Nathan.
Nguyen.
Thank you, Nathan. So before we're talking about the technical breakdown, I just want to give a summary real quick. The technical breakdown is going to be delivery and infections and the encryption process, and then the ransomware demand. Okay, so after the encryption process, so all your files are infected and encrypted, right? Talking your document, your images, your database, and an important file in your user file. And then the encryption algorithm will encrypt those files, and you need the key from the bad guy to unlock it, right? So that encryption process.
Hey, Nguyen, speaking of files, is this another argument for using the cloud? What about my QuickBooks Online?
Good. That's a very good question. Usually, knock on wood, but so far those files are not encrypted because they're not, those files,
they're not active on your machine.
Well, they're not file allocation table. I don't want to get into a technical aspect of it, but those, usually the cloud, they don't infect it. Not that I've seen it. But
so my Google Drive files, my Dropbox files, although Dropbox I've got running local as well.
But here's the thing, though. When it syncs, it will sync whatever you have. But you can do different version of those files. But we'll talk into that.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. That gives me hope.
Yeah, that's why I said the cloud's really helpful, right? It's really helpful. And I encourage people to do that. You'll use OneDrive, because doing this, this virus will not affect those files.
If you're Microsoft, you use OneDrive, right?
Right, right. But then there are other products out there as well, like
Dropbox,
Google Drive, and things like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the technical breakdown. Uh-huh. Then you have the ransomware demand. So they generate the file, the instruction, say your files are encrypted, and then you need to pay this. Okay, so that's a technical breakdown. Now let me show you talk about prevention tips.
Uh-huh.
Okay, how individuals can protect themselves from such ransomware. Okay, number one, keep software up to date. Okay, you can go to your computers and select automatic. I mean, for individual, I would do that, since you're not technical enough. Just do automatically. Make sure that on your Microsoft Windows, you see on security function, you see everything is green up to date. If you see anything yellow, look at it and make sure it's all green. That's a good indicator you're up to date.
And these vendors are pretty good. I mean, they may not spell out, hey, you need to install this because of MacNiber, however you say that, but they don't mess around with needless updates. And when they say, hey, there's security issues, please update, that should be taken seriously. And in fact, I don't know, and this is a separate issue, but it's collateral to this. You know, I'm one that I rarely tell my software applications to automatically download and install. I'll set it to where it automatically downloads, but I want to control the installation because every once in a while there's problems. And I'd rather know, you know, when I see an update, I might wait a week before I actually install it because I want to see, well, what are other people running into, especially with iOS. I rarely install iOS, you know, any sooner than a week after those things are available. What do you say?
Well, Apple usually tell you it's important, you need to do right away, right?
Right.
But we're talking about for general population, not everybody's technical. So I'm talking about like my mom and the elder especially the kid. They go into the computer, they will click on anything.
Have you seen updates from these major vendors that specifically deal with this? And if so, does it say that's what it...
Only the antivirus software.
Okay.
But they usually say, you know, there's a ransomware and there's a new kind. Make sure it's up to date.
Right. They're not going to call out a specific one because then...
Some, but not all.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the next one. The next prevention tip is to use antivirus or anti-malware solution. So I'm not gonna mention which one, but people can hear this radio. They can request, and I can tell them.
Is very similar, and I didn't read our disclaimer today because I don't think we're talking about any tax or real estate issues. But every time we start the shows where we are, we remind the listener that hey, just because you hear something on today's show or on our website or on our YouTube channel that we're getting ready to start. In fact, I think later today, when and I'll be working on that, don't run out and jump into the pool. The pool may not have enough water in it or have any water, and you're going to get hurt. So you need to consult with experts or somebody that's familiar with your unique facts and circumstances. And most people have a computer guy, right? And so if you need help or you have some questions, you know, off-the-cuff cursory answers are available by calling us. And you can text or call 713-581-0195. And if it's a question for Win-Win, I'll forward that on to him. If it's a question for me, I'll circle back to you sometime over the next few days. But, you know, we want to help our listeners stay out of these traps. I've had one, it's more than a client. It's one of my best friends that has a fairly recognizable spouse in a professional service industry. I won't mention. And they got hit with a ransomware attack. I don't know. It's been 5-6 years ago maybe. And I can't tell you the frustration, the heartache, the cost, that, you know, he ultimately had to submit the Bitcoin, as you say, and it wasn't an inexpensive amount, but they have you over a barrel. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to walk away and start a whole new paradigm with your computing systems? Go ahead.
Never, never pay them, because once you pay them, you are marked on their system forever.
Well, as an individual, that's probably the case, but as a business, you may not have a choice. Look at all the name brand companies that had to pay. They didn't talk about it, right, but they had to. But you bring up a good point. In my buddy's case, he was convinced that the group that showed up to help, and he interviewed several just off of Facebook and other venues. He was convinced that at the end of the day, the group that he had, you know, undo everything was part of or related to the group that caused it. And he never could figure out, was that a chicken and egg thing or an egg and chicken thing, basically, in terms of how they connected together. But he said it was clear that it was more than just happenstance that he found that solution. But anyway, that was 5 or 6 years ago. And if this wasn't a big company, this was you know, professional service practice, maybe 10 employees, 12 employees, and it cost them in the tens of thousands of dollars. And and not only that, it took them out. I mean, they use their systems to run the business, appointments and keeping track of, well, assorted personal file information. And I've marvel even now thinking about what he went through, that thankfully I haven't been, you know, the subject of one of these, but you never know. You never know.
Well, it's very unfortunate, and the bad guys today are using artificial intelligence or AI, so they can target you and they can do faster and quicker, and those viruses adapt. They adapt. They're using code. Those codes adapt quickly.
Yeah.
Right? So also to look at, be wary of suspicious email and link. And I keep telling people over and over again, I would say 80% of the virus come from an email phishing.
And it's every day.
Every single day. I say 90% of the whole internet are spam. That's my opinion.
I mean, if you look at your spam folder, at least in my case, I use Gmail. I mean, we use a workspace, a Google Workspace account, but I also use my Gmail because it's got some incredible flexibilities when you're working across multiple Google Workspace accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And but you look at your spam folder and it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's amazing what's coming in on a daily basis, and yet it doesn't all get trapped. And you know, one of the problems, at least in my case, I'm sure this is what contributes to the occasional spam email message that gets through, is I use the filters to automate labeling and forwarding certain emails on to my associates. And unfortunately, and I get the warning often when I set up a new filter that, hey, you might want to check or uncheck a couple of the boxes. You know, I tell it to start, I tell it to mark it as important. I check several of those boxes on the filter construction. And unfortunately, each one you check, you're diminishing the capability of Gmail spam filter potentially. And so you really have to be careful, and you have to think about, well, what's more important? Is it more important that I get this label put on this email, or is it more important that Gmail has a chance to block something that's
So that's why
hurt?
Most software like Google, you can enable strong spam filter. Like, for example, I tell you how I deal with mine, okay? Mine is...
And by the way, that strong spam filter is not a checkbox. You're talking about the overall settings, correct?
The overall setting, but on the spam, if you... I think the Google, they have an option where you... I think you pay, and that's a free one, but the pay option, you can enable just one click, and it's a more enforced, stronger spam filter. That's an option in there.
I'll have to check that. But I do pay for even on my Gmail account, but I pay for more space. Does that also get me this?
They have different level.
Yeah.
But I think your second level have that option, because mine is all filter. But I'm telling you, they also, the way I do mine, if it's internal email, it will go to my inbox. But anything outside external go to my spam box.
Huh.
Okay. There's some company are doing that. They take extreme measure because
I like
a big company that I'm not going to name it, but they do that. For example, like especially the government, if you internal, it'll go to inbox. Everything else goes to spam box, because they keep training people. You need to look at, if it's on the spam box, you can click it all day long. You will not infect anything.
Huh.
It show you, you can.
Okay, so
highlight.
That rule that we talked about last week,
mm-hmm.
that would apply to this
It will apply
Mag to this.
Yes.
Virus as well?
Right,
okay.
Right. Because if any phishing email, it will go into anything outside.
Of course,
outside,
they're good at making it not look like it's a phishing email, right?
But the company has if they use like the Microsoft 365 or any legitimate software, it will bring that, put it automatically to spam box, right?
Okay.
And you can, if it's external email, you can see, you can highlight it. You look at the header, you can see where it's coming from, okay? And you can see the extension of it.
We need to put that on our list for a future show, is examining emails and explain to people. I mean, it's hard when we're on an audio only, mm-hmm. but we need the header in an email is very telling. And I know we've got a situation where one of the homeowner boards that I'm president of over in San Antonio, we're undertaking a roof replacement. And, you know, it's a $100,000-plus job across these four buildings that make up the association. And apparently, and we don't know at this point, I'm suspicious now the roofing, quote, unquote, company itself, but we had a request to forward money to their bank account. And, you know, we had already been in discussions on putting 30% down, et cetera, et cetera. Well, our management company noticed on that email, it was one of these long email addresses, you know, that ended in .gmail, right? Like we were talking about a week ago, right? And so we called the company, or he did, and the guy said, oh, yeah, our email got hacked, and sorry about that. I'll send you over another one. Well, in came the new request, and it had the same. It's almost like if they're not the hacker, I'm convinced now the roofing company, quote, unquote, may be a hacker. They saw emails going back and forth from our accounts regarding the roof job, and decided, hey, here's a golden opportunity to snag money. They obviously knew about the 30% down requirement. And so if we hadn't, and I say we, our outside management company is pretty good about catching these things because they've got a lot of homeowner associations that would naturally be targets because the funds that are building up in each of those accounts. And if they hadn't have caught that, I'm convinced we would probably be out 30 grand right now, you know, which is roughly the amount of money. But this is serious stuff.
Well, you see, the next time I'm going to talk about something even more serious, okay? Even though all the prevention we have, we're talking about today, there's some cases that the next topic I want to talk about, not now, but in the future, they can intercept your email, for example, 365, okay? And they can use your legitimate email, meaning they take over your email. They create the rules. They intercept. It's already happening right now. And a lot of, like, people transfer money. They thought they're talking to a person from A to B. There was an individual in the middle pretend to be A.
Sure.
And give your banking information. And they intercepting it. And then they respond back. They hide the email from individual A and then send another email to individual B with a different transferring.
That almost sounds like what must have happened.
Well, it is happened very often, but that is target. And the next time we talk about it, that's a little more technical, okay? And it's happening. But regardless, if you protect yourself, you are better off than all this step. You're 60% better than most people.
Yeah.
If you do that.
Yeah.
Still, 60 to 70% still a lot, right?
It's interesting how the priority that we'll place on some things, and there is certainly that secondary priority where, okay, we know this is something we need to do, but we don't take action yet. And that's where I would put the Roth conversion. And I understand part of, and I don't hear people say this often, so maybe they're not thinking this way, but I know as a CPA that invests in real estate transactions myself and consult with many, many others, I know there's always that lingering feeling in the back of your mind that, well, what happens, especially in this market that we're, I think, coming out of, what happens if I convert, I pay a tax based on a valuation of a project, and then the valuation goes south because of whatever, you know, the interest rates, which is what I think affected predominantly has affected the current issues we have. You know, the interest rates have gone up, in turn driving higher cap rates, which in turn drive lower valuations. And so the unknown is one of the factors that keep people from acting. And I would tell you, well, generally, you're right. There is a chance that you're going to pay tax based on a valuation that changes over time. And of course, it can go up as well, which is the bet that I would make on most real estate transactions, because the real estate and specifically, I'm referring to the type of transactions that are my clients and myself invest in, where they're private company investments. These are not REITs or real estate investment trust, traded on Wall Street. Like, for instance, something like a Camden Property Trust is a good example, or I can't think of some of the big commercial real estate funds, but they're operated as REITs. They're tradable. They're liquid. Those are valued totally differently than the small private company investments that we partner in, and we get significant discounts off of the amount that you might have bought into a partnership for, or created with other partners. And those discounts can be half as much as if you invest in a Wall Street, New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ traded security, whether it's a real estate investment trust or whether it's Apple stock, right? And so even in that case, when you look at the impending tax rate changes that must occur. It's not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's not who's in the White House or who's not in the White House. There is a hard wall that we as a country and as that has a constrained budget. In other words, I understand some of you are going to say, well, we're just going to go print more money. Really? What happened the last time we did that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, right? You've got some limits on how much you can print without there being a drop in the, quote, good faith and credit of the U.S. government, end quote, effect as to why people will buy T-bills and other treasuries. And when you think about it, it's more than a little remarkable that the dollar, the U.S. dollar, is still given in spite of what Saudi Arabia just did, where they're now transacting oil sales and other currencies as well as the dollar. In spite of that, the U.S. dollar remains that, I guess, light on the hill, that shining light on the hill in terms of people's confidence in that paper, literally paper. There's no gold behind it anymore and hadn't been for quite a while. But at some point here in the next, call it 4 to 5 years, 28, 29, maybe 2030, depending on our spending levels and interest rates, et cetera, that the government has to pay, we will have exhausted the entirety of the remaining small sliver of what we refer to as the discretionary portion of the U.S. budget. And that's when the proverbial crap is going to hit the fan in terms of our ability to borrow, because there will be no assurance that all of the government's debts can be serviced, by paying interest on them. And, let's see how easy it is to sell treasury bills and treasury bonds, et cetera, once that occurs. But so bottom line, what's going to happen to avoid that, or what may happen, should happen, in part at least, is the tax rates will have to be increased. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, back in 2009, when they did the study that most people that listen to this show will be familiar with, it was a 150% increase in the tax rates that would need to occur to forestall the looming disaster. Now, there's been tweaks and modifications to their formulation, and it would be closer to 200% here 15 years later. And the deficit is growing at a $2 trillion plus dollar amount each year. Each year, we're short a couple trillion dollars. And by the year 2034, and this was just recently updated by the Congressional Budget Office, we'll be sitting at roughly $54 trillion. A dollar deficit. And that's the deficit based on the lower number that we'll cop to as a country. We don't count things that aren't in the current budgetary cycle, even though we've already agreed to index Social Security, Medicare, assorted other government programs are indexed to rise with inflation or other math metrics. If it doesn't affect the current year cycle, we don't count it. So the near $35 trillion, I think we're sitting at about 34 34.9 right now. By 2034, we'll be at roughly $54 trillion, assuming the assumption set that CBO used in updating their 10-year forecast, and that's staggering. And the amount of borrowing that's going to have to take place, somewhere in the $20 trillion range just over the next 10 years to accommodate those deficits. And as I've mentioned many times, just our interest expense this year, fiscal year, in September 30th, 2024 will be over the $1.1 trillion mark. It'll be the third largest component of the U.S. Fiscal year budget. It'll be third behind Medicare/Medicaid, then Social Security, and then interest on the debt. We will have surpassed military spending, presuming we don't have additional fires break out that end up taking significant current year spending before the end of September to address. But you back up 10 years ago, and it would have been unthinkable at that time that we would be paying more in interest expense than defense spending. Let's do this. Let's take one last break. We'll come back for just a few minutes back on the Roth conversion issue and some of my thoughts on how to get started sooner rather than later. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones and
did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the last segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we were talking Roth conversions, and I had indicated that the number one reason that I hear when I ask people, why don't you get started, is, well, I don't have the money to pay the tax, and I would suggest to you that that needn't keep you from getting started. I mean, you can access money in your current 401k plan. You can take a plan loan for up to $50,000. Well, actually, up to $100,000 if your spouse is also a member of your solo K, or what I refer to as a self-directed 401 trust. You know, there's that up to $100,000 loan, and then you could also choose to file and owe the IRS. I would suggest you stay under the $50,000 mark, because that gives you a little bit more assured outcome in terms of being approved for the installment loan. But I'll just tell you, you know, we can run some numbers if you don't believe me, and paying some interest on that tax that you take out the installment loan for, or paying interest back to yourself effectively if you're doing it through a self-directed 401 trust, those amounts pale in comparison to the tax that you're going to get clobbered with down the road. And one thing I want to further make clear, because I, you know, when I have people that are not invested in private company investments talk to me about Roth, they seem to have the opinion that, well, you know, it's not really clear whether it would be a good thing or a bad thing. And I will fully stipulate the decision becomes less certain than if you're invested in the real estate private partnership syndication type investment or other private company investments. But if you think about it, I mentioned earlier that I've seen scenarios where the discounts that are available for private company investments, where you're valuing for purposes of Roth conversion, so you have to provide the fair market value to whoever's going to report the conversion for you, which we can do in most cases, a 50% reduction, that's like having downside protection on the valuation of what those securities might eventually be worth to offset your worries in that regard. What do you have to offset the downside projection on Apple stock or AT&T or whatever stock you're talking about? you really don't have anything unless you're an insider and you know something, you know, which technically I think you're prohibited from trading on. But bottom line is, you know, in terms of what we invest in, we've got significant benefits when it comes to the Roth arena in terms of what we're having to pay to do to execute the conversion. And, you know, it basically would cost you half of what you'd have to pay on a similar amount of money if it were in stock market, you know, marketable investments where, you know, you've got professional management, many layers of professional management. You've got a product that, you know, there's a big market for occasionally, or not occasionally, pretty much all the time. It's not like real estate where you may not be able to rent your units at some points in time. There might be a pandemic where it's easier to rent them. You might, but you may not have tenants making money to pay you. You might not be able to refinance when you think you're going to. You might not be able to sell when your pro forma data that you originally thought was going to happen comes time to when you thought it might refinance or sell. And so we've got all these risks that are typically more significant than in a stock market type company or investment. And for that, we're thankful because at base, we understand, any of us that have gotten this far in the multifamily arena, we understand how those investments operate. There's not near the fluctuations in value as there are with stock market investments. But anyway, well, we're coming to the end of the show. I wanted to circle back to that Roth conversion topic, and we'll continue to talk about it because it's every day we're a step closer to when calamity is going to strike. And if you have your money in Roth, at some point you got to qualify it, cure it for 5 years or age 59 and a half, then you're going to pay a lot more in tax the rest of your life. 85 to 86 is what the IRS life expectancy tables show for males and 86, 80, or 87, 88 for females. That's a long time to need to be paying your bills. So taxes will matter. And contrary to the public general layperson's belief, you won't be paying less taxes when you start taking your required minimum distributions out of your 401. Less taxes than you were making maybe in your job. Okay, we'll let you run. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.